the studios of Boise State Public Radio News. I'm Gemma Gaudet, and more Idaho Matters right now. All right, if you're looking for the perfect book to kick off an early summer, well, guess what? We know what you should be reading because New York Times bestselling author Emily Henry is back with her latest novel. It's called Happy Place. It's a story full of a lot of humor and friendship and romance, but it's set in this great seaside town. I mean, really, what more could you ask for in a summer read? Well, we are lucky enough to have the author Emily Henry with us today. Emily, it's really nice to have you back on the program.
Oh my gosh, it's so nice to be back, Gemma.
Okay, so for folks who have not read the book yet, give us kind of a general premise.
Sure. So Happy Place is the story of Harriet and Wynn, who have been the perfect couple ever since they got together back in their college days. And that was about 8 years ago now. They've both moved on. They're, you know, working on their careers. Harriet is a surgical resident in San Francisco. And part of their relationship has been that every summer they take this trip to this coastal Maine cottage that belongs to one of their family friends or their friends' families. Mm-hmm. And they do this with their shared group of best friends. And it's the best week of the year. And it's kind of what Harriet lives for at this point. And this year's trip, though, is going to be a little bit different because Harriet and Wynn have secretly broken up. And her plan is to go on the trip alone. And she's going to break the news to their friends. And then Wynn can take the next year's trip. Only when she shows up at the cottage, Wynn is already there. And it turns out that her friend's family is selling the house. And so this is their last chance to all be together and do all of the things that have kind of become their traditions and say goodbye to the era that they're leaving behind. So she and Wynn agree that they will hold off on telling their friends about the breakup for another week so they can all have this perfect dreamy experience before they ruin it all, before they break the friend group.
Yeah, and it's anything but dreamy, that's for sure,
yes,
as the week progresses.
Yes.
So I understand that this was actually not the story that you had originally set out to write. Is that correct?
That is correct. I mean, it's like, it's so interesting because on the plot level, sure, it's like basically more or less the same. But the thing is, I wanted to write this book because I was loving watching the 1940s screwball comedy of remarriages. His Girl Friday and The Lady Eve. And those are all so absurd and absurdly fun and just like ridiculous over the top scenarios. And that's what I love about them. And so I thought, okay, I'm going to do my play on that. And that is a lot of opportunity for humor and jokes and, you know, all of that. And then I started writing it and I realized that to have a couple who had been together and loved each other for 8 years, and then to have them end their relationship, and then to force them back into the same confined space for a week was going to be so much more emotional and angsty than what I thought that I was going to be writing. So I did do multiple passes of this draft or of drafts for this book that were just finding the humor in this ridiculous scenario. But it still has a lot more like heft and melancholy, I think, than what I thought I would be writing, and is ultimately so much a book about getting to a point in life where you've already invested so much into a certain way of being, and you have that moment of panic of like, what if that's not really what I want? That then what? Mm-hmm. Like, what do I do? So yeah, I mean, like I said, it like seems from the exterior like it's the book that I thought I was going to write, but it actually felt very different.
Well, and I think you bring up a really good point, like in the book itself, because they're all about 30, and mm-hmm. and I don't know about you, but I was just talking to my soon-to-be 15-year-old about like how I found my 20s to be probably the hardest decade in a lot of ways, because you're finding yourself. You've been launched out of college. Your friends aren't necessarily all with you, right?
Yeah.
And then you're supposed to know what you want to do for the rest of your life. I mean, and there's just such pressure on you to figure all of that out. And I don't think within our culture we give ourselves a lot of breathing room to figure that out. And you really, I think, dig into this in the book about your self-worth being so wrapped up in in what you do. And gosh, yeah. I mean, Harriet in particular, again, I mean, did you think that that's where this would go? Or was it almost like, well, this is who Harriet is?
I think it was more that this is who Harriet is. I mean, to an extent, I think I knew I would be investigating those things because I had this ensemble cast mm-hmm. and I thought, okay, what's interesting about your 30s is you're making all of these semi-permanent feeling decisions for the first time for a lot of people, like, or just making big decisions that might take you in a different direction than the people that you spent your 20s with. Like, you'll have friends who are having kids and you'll also have friends who are like getting hysterectomies uh-huh. because they've decided uh-huh. they don't want kids and they have, you know, they need to take care of themselves, whatever. Like you have friends who are 15 years into one career path and still love it. And you have friends who have felt like lost for the last 15 years and don't really know like what their quote unquote thing is. And like you said, there's this unbelievable amount of pressure for your job to be significant to your identity. And, you know, mm-hmm. I was just doing a different interview before this and it, you know, I got asked the age old question of like, how did you become a writer? Like, when did you know you wanted to be a writer? And I thought about it and realized like when I was 8 years old, I had to write down like for a school assignment, what I would be when I grew up, which is so right. deranged. It's deranged yeah. because you think about an 8 year old and you're like, I was pretending to be a wolf. Like, this is ridiculous. but at that point, you're already being told you need to be thinking about what you're going to be when you grow up yeah. and not like, what yeah. are you going to do? What are you going to be? And it's like that career name is not just a thing that you're going to do. It's who you're going to be. And there is so much pressure to love your work and to identify mm-hmm. with your work. And, you know, there's that thing about like when you go to a party and you meet someone new, they ask, what do you do for work? Because it's supposed to be like this easy inroad to conversation. But for a lot of people, it's like such a horrible sore point to talk about because you're like, I don't feel like that represents me at all. Or I don't want to think mm-hmm. about work or even like, you know, I had some close friends. This is probably part of, again, the genesis of this friend group. All making different decisions. I had some close friends who started a bakery and it was so good. They were so talented. Like it was, the branding was great. It was really picking up steam. And then they were like, oh no, we hate this. Like if we do this yeah. is going to have to be our whole life because you have to get up at 3 a.m. every single day to bake. Mm-hmm. And like your schedule is going to be totally different from all of your friends. And if we commit to this, it means it we're less and less likely to be able to have kids because you know, when will we have feel like we have the time to start a family and all of that. And there were so many incredible conversations that came out of their decision to shutter the business that to me really opened my eyes to the way that we think about work as identity because they basically both were like, you know what I want? I want a job. I want a job I go to.
Yeah.
For prescribed hours and then I go home and I don't think about it. And it's like I'm just kind of relaxing while I'm there. I'm doing a necessary task that helps the world go round, but it doesn't have to mean something about who I am. I am a person and I have innate value, whether I am like an astronaut or a cashier, you know?
Right. Yeah. And I think that you know, it's interesting. I mean, you look at Cleo and Kimmy in the book, right? And this is, we should say, mm-hmm. this is your largest cast of characters. I mean, you really have like yes. six characters. I mean, Harriet and Wynne are the two main characters, but you have right. these four really strong supporting characters. And it's interesting too, because when you look at the first friend group, you know, they met in mm-hmm. college, Sabrina and Cleo and, yeah. and Harriet. I mean, I think we all go through this, right? Where yes, you are each other's, you know, world and your access when you're in college and maybe shortly after. Mm-hmm. And that continues, but then life happens. I mean, Cleo and yeah. Kimmy have this farm. They have to get up early, right? Sabrina mm-hmm. and Parth are attorneys. I mean, it's all of this, like you're finding your way and there's almost like this melancholy in the book, I think.
For sure, of
these friendships, not ending, but really needing to transform into something yeah. new.
And it's funny because there was a review of the book recently that I hadn't really thought of it this way, but the writer, the reviewer was saying that it's funny because the pandemic is not a part of the book, it's not mentioned, but they were like, but it's also very much a pandemic book because all of the concerns and all of the questions, I think, were the things that really kind of came front and center for a lot of us in the last few years. And part of that, I do think, was that feeling of loss and loneliness of like when, you know, you if when you're when as you get older and your friends all end up in different places, it's like you see each other so much less. And then the pandemic happened and there was this sense of isolation and loneliness because these people who you used to be able to visit or have come visit you are suddenly like beyond your reach and you have to find new ways to connect. And everybody's also like miserably depressed and anxious. And so you're trying to find ways to be present while also like under this incredible amount of pressure and duress. And yeah, I mean, I think that that melancholy that pervades the book was just kind of like the space that I was occupying and thinking about all of the same things. Because like when your life gets suddenly very small, you can see much more clearly how much you like it or don't like it. You're like, okay, if I can see four people in my little like bubble, are they the right four people? Like if the only thing I'm doing every single day is going to work, is it the right job? That kind of thing.
Well, and I also really appreciate that you tackle mental health in this book. And I mean, and again, we could look at that as part of the pandemic, right? We know so many people really dealt with that. But I think, write about it in a really beautiful way. And what was interesting to me was as I was reading it, and I won't give away anything, but with this one particular character, I kept thinking, you know, like they must have depression. Like there's something more going on there. Like, and then it comes and you're like, oh, I mean, so again, when you're writing this character, is it like, oh, did you know that this would kind of be part of that storyline?
It's so weird, but I actually didn't because I think that that's the I think on a subconscious level I knew. Honestly, I think I both I and my partner have mental illness and are medicated for it, and it's the kind of thing where you don't really, you know, you don't really know it's there until you get help. For a lot of people, it's like you don't really realize how depressed or how anxious you are. You kind of think this is just what being alive on the planet is. And then when you finally get the right help, whether it's therapy or medicine or both, it's pretty shocking to realize that you could have just been feeling better for a long time. And it's pretty shocking to realize, you know, everybody likes to say depression lies, but you don't really even get what that means until you're taking care of yourself, until you're like treating yourself correctly. And you're like, oh, wow, I was seeing everything so distorted. And so even though I didn't know that that's kind of what I was writing toward with that character, this the character's view of themselves is definitely distorted. Their view of reality is so clearly distorted. And you know, I think sometimes, unfortunately, depression is really hard to recognize because it creeps up on you. It's like you think, oh, this person's just going through a hard time, and then it's going on for longer, and you're like, wow, they're really like not getting it together. They're not snapping out of it, whatever. And it's like it's kind of that slow boiling frog metaphor where it's like you don't see the moment it happens. It's just suddenly it's everywhere, and it's clouding everything. So that was kind of my experience with the character too, is just kind of watching this amp up and amp up and amp up until suddenly it was like, oh, obviously this is what's going on with this person.
I just thought it was just so, really, honestly, so well done and gives people, I would hope, an insight into what people struggle with that. So really well done. And I must say very
Thank
quickly
you.
before I let you go, it is a fabulous book. I literally stayed up way too late, read it in like 2 days. So
Thank
I'm
you.
anxiously awaiting you to write another one.
Yes. Well, I'm working on it. With any luck, next summer, I'll be back here talking to you again with a new book.
Fabulous. Well, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This was lovely.
We've been talking with Emily Henry about her brand new book, Happy Place. Thanks so much for listening to Idaho Matters. Boise State Public Radio and Idaho Matters are members of the NPR Network. It's an independent coalition of public media podcasters. You can find more shows in the network wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Gemma Gaudette. We'll see you tomorrow.
What if the greatest tragedy of your life was just covered up?
I've never seen anything like that before or after.
This is the story of the worst marine-on-marine friendly fire in modern history, a story kept from the public.
It's like, what did y'all have to hide?
Listen to NPR's Embedded podcast in its latest series, Taking Cover.